Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast brought to you by Built Bar. Head on over to builtbar.com, use promo code Locked On, and get $10 off your first order. I'm joined here by Pete Zayas. All right, so today's hypothetical question, I'm not sure if you saw that viral fight that made its way around Twitter.
Oh, yes, I did. That was fantastic.
So my quick backstory here, when I turned 21 and, you know, obviously I was going to start going into bars, my dad pulled me aside and he was like, hey, you're going to get drunk. You're going to think somebody said something to disrespect you or does something to disrespect you and you're going to want to fight. Don't. Mm-hmm. Right. And his thinking was, there's so much MMA stuff out there. You never really know who's training, right?
Sure.
And like, I can only imagine the thoughts that were running through that dude who got his ass kicked head when the guy squares up and roundhouse kicks him in the face.
You should have known by his stance immediately. He's like, oh, this is deep shit. Yeah.
So my question is, have you ever been in a fight that you thought you, like going in, you felt pretty confident about, and then you walked away from it like, Jesus, that was the wrong call.
No. I got my ass kicked once, and I was not surprised that the guy kicked my ass. So, no, I have not. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one time, it was like, I was younger. I wasn't like, this was pre-21. It was like in high school. Mm-hmm. And we played, I think it was Huntington Beach High School. And, they had this really small point guard, and you know, we were kind of going at it, jawing at each other the whole game or whatever. And it was a home game for us. And for some reason, I don't think they rode the bus, which was kind of wild because Huntington Beach up to Esperanza is a bit of a trek. It's like 45 minutes.
Okay.
So he was like around the gym afterward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was like walking out, you know, and this guy like calls out. He was tiny again. Really small guy, and you know, he like calls me over. He's like, "Hey, fuck you, this and da da da." Uh-huh. And I was like, "I mean, if you want to do this, we can do this. I don't think it's going to end very well." Bah.
He was ready.
He squared up and threw the right hook to end all right hooks, and I'm pretty sure I was out by the time I hit the floor. It was just
wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like I kind of chalk it up to, it was a bit of a cheap shot, you know?
Yeah. That like, kid lived out Lakers Reddit's fantasy, man.
Yep. Yeah. So I think he went on to found Lakers Reddit. I think is
there you go.
But yeah, I still kind of chalk it up to like, it was a bit of a cheap shot. We never said like go on the fight. So like I never had a chance to like even put my hands up, and then you know I had a fist in my mouth. But you know, still it was the kind of thing that it was super humbling. This guy, I and even then I was not a very big guy, so I think I weighed like 165 at the time, and the guy I probably had like 20 pounds on him. He was not big, and he just connected the right way. And there was a moment, like you said, where he squared up and I was like, oh shit, this guy knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I had just enough time to have that thought run through my head before I was on the floor, basically.
Before his fist ran through your head. Yes.
Yeah. So I felt bad for the guy. He had it coming. You could tell like that kind of chubby-ish guy with his shirt off. That was the first sign that he was a bit of a douche and probably had something coming to him. But boy, the guy who looked like Harrison took him to took him
Yeah, that's like MMA Harrison right there.
Harrison like watched that with his fist raised.
You know,
say
you
one
know
more was... thing, Anthony.
You know what had me cracking up was like that one last shot to the ribs that he gave him.
Oh.
Like the guy had like clearly given up, and like he even tapped the spot like he was gonna hit. He was like, all right, right here, like backed up. Wow! And like the guy's walking away, like, oof, like just give him something to remember him by. Like, don't do that again.
You actually could see his like chest like caved in right there. He broke that rib. And you could see it. Like it was he was all kinds of fucked up.
I think, I don't know, this is like me getting old, but I think that like getting your ass kicked or it, like has some, like the internet would be very different if we had, the, if it carried the thread of ass kicking is the way that in-person interactions do, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know. I'm just saying there's some value in the thread of, you know, not running, you know, being, getting your ass kicked so you don't run your mouth the way that, that you would.
Yeah, otherwise. I don't consider myself a very intimidating looking person, but it's just right, different likewise. when you're saying stuff to somebody's face that people try to throw out there on the internet. Mm-hmm. It's just a little different. All right. Today's show, we are going to talk about the latest that we were going into the show, and in show planning, I was expecting to be able to talk about baseball's plan to get back in to business. Or whether they were going to be able to get back to business at all, right? They have basically the league office sent the players union some version of a plan to return. And they were supposed to have looked at it today and responded. Apparently that is not the case.
Can I jump in? Woj just tweeted about this. Okay. He said, ESPN sources, attendees left Board of Governors call with Adam Silver today feeling positive about momentum toward an NBA return to play this season. Discussion included how league and players will need to get comfortable with some positive tests for virus, not shutting down a resumption. Meaning that there has to be the idea, like if a player tests positive, we aren't stopping. Are you all comfortable with that? Because it's like there's a decent chance of it happening. There's a decent chance that like that they contracted it from elsewhere, right? Like there's all sorts of but like that's a great question. Is like if there's another Rudy Gobert, like we still cool with doing this?
And what if it's Rudy Gobert again?
One of the only people to get it twice, right, fucking guy.
No. I think it's interesting though. The framing of this is interesting, right? Because I think for a lot of players, it's already pushing it in terms of their own comfort with potentially returning, right? But then when they're asked, hey, those of you who might not be comfortable, by the way, if somebody catches this, we aren't stopping right away. I wonder how many players are going to say, whoa, I'm not cool with that. Because personally, this crosses a line for me. This is where I am no longer comfortable if I'm an NBA player. Because you and I are having this conversation as two people who will continue to have our jobs, you know, regardless, right? For the foreseeable future, hopefully, right? Hopefully. Maybe.
Oh, let's hope. Yeah.
Well, though not based on the last, not based I'm on like, last text to me.
Yeah. Now this is me like sliding away from you. That's I don't know, man. That's some dangerous shit to put out into the. Like, you and I, we're gonna have our jobs no matter what. Like, fucking basketball gods don't like that shit, man.
Yeah, it's true. But under most circumstances, you and I will continue to remain hopefully employed, right?
Uh huh.
Whereas, like, there are some players in the NBA right now who. This might be their only year in the NBA, you know?
Or they're playing for a new contract. And
yeah. And so, you know, for those guys, I see them saying, fuck it. I'm willing to risk whatever it takes to at least get a full year's worth of a check this season, right? In this one year that I'm in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Although some of guys who have been around a little bit longer and maybe their team is on the outside of the playoff picture looking in or, you know, whatever, they might be looking at this and saying, it's just not worth it to me. Or even some of those guys whose teams are in the playoff picture, like somebody like JaVale McGee, I'm not going to speak directly for McGee here, but we know he has asthma, right? And he already has a couple championships. He'll probably get another contract after this year. He played well enough to earn one, right?
And he's under contract for next year.
Yeah. And so if I'm JaVale, I wouldn't, or even not even going down that path, I wouldn't hold it against JaVale if he said, guys, I'm sorry. I am at risk here. Sure. I am at risk here. And now you're now the league is talking about not stopping, even if somebody tests positive. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be legitimately nervous if I was JaVale. So, and yeah. You know, how the league handles that, you know, do they just say, all right, hey, you get your check this year, or you get your prorated check this year, and we will see you next year or whatever. But there are players who I wouldn't hold it against them for this being, you know, this kind of overstepping a line. I want your thoughts on this. We'll take a quick second. I want your I'm interested to see if this crosses a line for you. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Built Bar has, again, I cannot thank them enough for the amount of support they've thrown behind this entire network. So we got to make sure we continue to show them a similar level of support in return. And it's a pretty easy thing to do, given how tasty and nutritious and just useful a protein bar as good as Built Bar produces is, right? Their biggest thing and the biggest difference here is just how good these bars taste. They have 16 flavors, 8 with nuts, 8 without. They're covered in 100% chocolate, and they're super soft and easy to chew. I personally have always said that, you know, whether it's the texture, the actual taste, whatever, protein bars have never particularly sat well with me. And these do. These have been phenomenal. I'm on box number 2 now. I raced through the first box and on now. On box number 2, it's basically replaced my breakfast. It's been really nice, and you know, whether you use them for that or you're trying to cut weight or stay at weight while you work out, Built Bar has you covered for all of those things. So again, that's builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to save $10 off your first order. Again, that's builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON, and let's continue to show our support to a company that has done a ton for our entire network. So does this, finding out that the league might continue even if somebody tests positive, you know, where would your head be if you were an NBA player and this is what came out of today's meeting?
I mean, that's the only way you can continue. Because there's no way to continue.
We already saw it with UFC.
Right. There's with some guarantee that somebody's not going to get it, right? Or you're not going to be boxing out someone who, you know, picked it up at home or
right.
However they got it, right? Like there is going to be a risk, just as there is in society in general, and going to the grocery store, right? Mm-hmm. I think for everybody, I think what they need to do is give players who feel that way some recourse without punishment, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, in all NBA contracts, there's, you know, denial of services clause, right? Like if you're healthy and mm-hmm. you need to be able to play, that's part of the contract, right? It's not just I don't want to play, so I'm not going to. I think they need to come to an agreement where anybody who's not comfortable playing isn't punished by that.
Somebody like Carl Anthony Towns.
Like, how do you tell cats play, man? Like,
right.
That said, I think that there are plenty of people who do want to play, right? Andrew Greif, who covers the Clippers for the LA Times, tweeted out that you know, one player said that their sense was it was about a 70-30 split in favor of resuming play, but 30% is a lot of people, man.
That's a lot. That's higher than I would have maybe thought.
Well, part of it too is like, what if you're on a lottery team, right? Like, what if you're not, like, of course the Lakers want to come back, the Bucks and the Clippers want to come back.
Yeah.
What if you're playing for the Hawks? What if you're playing for the Knicks, especially the Knicks in New York, man, with everything right. that's happened?
Well, I wouldn't want to play for the Knicks, like, under the best of circumstances.
But yeah, like, do you want to just, like, your team's not going to make the playoffs? Do you want to put yourself at risk and there not really not be much like benefit to it from a competitive standpoint, right? How do you tell those guys to go back to work? That said, I'm okay with them proceeding with full well knowing that this does increase the risk. Like, there's yeah. it's a it's a cost benefit type thing, right? Like, and it gets into all sorts of philosophical, all right, like what is one human life worth, right? Like, yeah. what are you willing to do to put one at risk? How much money, how many jobs are worth one human life?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, according to Captain America, even one non-human life wasn't worth risking it for when Thanos was like staring him down. It's a major plot hole for me in that movie. I know you share, right? You and I talk.
Oh yeah. I talk about this all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the difference here between, you know, like initially, right? If initially we would have said that, you know, maybe you're more willing to risk it a little bit in the first wave when this was first spreading throughout the country, I think it would have made a little bit more sense because we didn't quite know what this was capable of, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now we know.
I mean, right. We know more at least, yeah.
Right.
Because we don't know what's it going to behave like? What's it going to be like in 2 or 3 months?
Right.
A lot of states are reopening, right? Like, what is the, you know, a lot of the scientists are saying there's going to be a second wave.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know. Like, and they don't know either, right? Like, mm-hmm. So we do know more. I'll give you that. Yeah.
So, like, what I mean to say though, there is, you know, if you're putting people at risk by coming back, that decision should carry a lot more weight than maybe initially, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now that we understand a little bit more about what this thing is capable of. But even still, like, I think we need to have empathy both ways. I think we need to be empathetic to the people who are saying it isn't worth it, right? And I think in a league, and we're gonna talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the interpersonal relationships in the NBA in a second. But in a league where it is so tight-knit and that fraternity is so close, and that door can sometimes swing both ways, right? Like, if somebody says while they're on a playoff team, hey, I'm not comfortable playing, does that player get blackballed, right? Mm-hmm. Is there any way to protect that player from that, right? And, you know, whether that's like literally blackballed, they know they don't play any further, or from that point on, players kind of look over their shoulder at that player. Hey, can we really actually trust that guy? Is he willing to go, you know, to bat for us in any situation? I think we need to have empathy for the people who aren't comfortable, but I also think we need to have empathy for the people who are, right? Because there are, like I said earlier, there are players who might not have another opportunity to play in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And If they are saying, hey, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to come back, I don't think we can hold it against them for saying that, right?
Sure, or so for long
as it's done as intelligently as possible, as smart, you know, as carefully as they can possibly be with this. I don't really know. And, you know, it's kind of too bad because I was hoping to see the response, you know, from baseball players to whatever the literal plan that baseball implements. Like, I'm interested in what that looks like and what that might mean for basketball, even though both stages of those seasons is not apples to apples. But, you know, I'm the fact that 30% of players, and I think that was probably in an anonymous poll, right? And informal, but uh-huh. I think the anonymity to it is really important because I would imagine when somebody like LeBron James or Giannis or Kawhi, that collection of superstars that Chris Haynes got together and got on a call. I think it was LeBron, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Giannis, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and Steph Curry. They all held a call together. So with that kind of cachet, you know, behind the group that wants to play, I can see why there are some players who might not be comfortable with it, but might not also be comfortable coming forth with their discomfort. You know, there are levels to all of this that you know, are really, really complicated. How do you think the NBA handles that? Is there a way to handle it?
No, I don't think there is. I think that, you know, yeah, there's going to be that peer pressure that I would hope that. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about, like, there needs to be a formal recourse for those who don't want to be involved. And But again, like it's, they can only be anonymous for so long. Right.
Right.
And like this, I would hope the NBA really prides itself on being progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got people giving, you know, players shit for saying, I really don't want to do this. I have, and like whatever reason, if it's their, or even if they do want to mm-hmm. go do this, like it doesn't have to be your only season in the league for it to be justifiable.
Yeah.
LeBron wants to win his fourth ring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Giannis that's okay.
wants his first.
Giannis wants his first, right? Your motivations for that, that's your business. That's not mine or anyone else's. But they, I would like to think that there's room for everybody, and there's room for everybody, every decision, every point of view. I think that for the lottery teams, especially, I'm not talking about like a team like the Pelicans, for example, that has a chance, but like the teams that are just playing out the string, getting, you know, like, are we really going to drag them to Vegas to, you know, play 10 yeah. games so that to basically get the be a warm up team,
yeah.
right? To get the right that money to get, you know, teams warmed up for the playoffs and all of that.
that seems even crueler,
right? That's what I'm saying.
at least the regional sports money, right? At least that's money that goes like by some way into their pocket. But the right. idea that there are teams at the bottom of the league that you're going to risk catching coronavirus just so that the other teams can get in shape for a playoffs that you aren't going to participate in.
That's what I'm saying. That's
pretty fucking cruel.
and that's partially why the 30% number, like, it's high, but I'm not surprised terribly yeah. by it, because we had like 18 or 19 games left in the season for most teams.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, man, we've sucked for the last 6 years. Remember what those last 20 yeah. games are like? Just like, all right, let's get this over with. You're already scouting draft prospects. You're already yeah. like, mind is on the off season and all that.
So there are players showing up to practice like, oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. there it is. Yeah. And also, yeah, it comes to down to like, I don't know about you, and maybe there are different ways to administer these tests, but and what kind of test has the NBA acquired? How many of them? How frequent are they going to be testing? This is a whole rabbit hole, but like, I don't know about you, man, but that test don't look too comfortable to take on a regular basis, right? You got to get that damn thing up your nose every yeah. game on top of getting teams warmed up for the playoffs that you aren't going to participate in and all that. Like, yeah, they're going to have to navigate that. And if it is a 70-30 split, just be compassionate to the 30 that don't want to do it.
Yeah. I think that compassion extends both ways. Honestly, I think obviously more, I don't want to use the word more, but you know, I think the compassion for those who aren't comfortable coming back, I think that compassion might be slightly more needed, maybe more necessary, because like that's a big thing to say for, you know, these are some of the most competitive people on the planet. And, you know, we just watched Michael Jordan break down at the very idea that people aren't as competitive as he is. Like, I'm not saying that there are a bunch of Michael Jordans out there in the NBA right now, but somebody like LeBron, if LeBron looks at JaVale and JaVale says, hey, I'm not comfortable playing, how does LeBron take that, you know? And if LeBron is so pro player empowerment, he has to also be willing to say, you know what, JaVale, that's cool, man. I'll see you next year. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know, this is one of those spots where, as much as the league has to remain progressive and consistent in its progressiveness on this subject, the players themselves have to remain, you know, progressive, so just as progressive with their own teammates, with their own contemporaries, because you're sticking your neck out there quite a ways if you're willing to say, hey, I am not comfortable playing under these circumstances. That could have ramifications for that player in the culture of the NBA. And if the NBA is truly as progressive as it is, that can't exist. That can't go on.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, you know, Matt and I spent yesterday's show talking about the concept of leadership as Michael Jordan saw it. And, you know, I thought about it overnight, and I feel even more adamantly that I'm not positive that this is something we should, that people who didn't play in the NBA can judge. We can analyze it. We can give our thoughts on leadership in general, but I'm not positive that we can actually judge what is or is not good or bad leadership in the NBA or in a professional sport. So let's take a quick second. I'm interested in your thoughts on that, Pete. So we'll come back to that here in a bit. So let's start here. Matt is somebody who says he never played basketball, right? So I think it's kind of difficult, you know, for him to potentially contextualize it, you know, because of that. And he copped to that much on yesterday's show. Pete, you and I both played basketball, obvious, not at this level. But we did play it, in, you know, a different time for one thing. You know, you were in high school, you know, what was it? 15 years ago, 15,
20,
20 years ago. I was okay. Cool. I feel even better. I was in school.
And it's like, been more than 20 years now. 22. I graduated 22 years ago. Jesus.
Yeah. Sorry, we're going on 16 for me. I graduated in 04. So we're, you know, but you know, we both played sports and we grew up playing sports. And when we played, the concept of leadership was this kind of tough love thing. You know, mm-hmm. we were kind of, I think we were heading in the direction where we were starting to learn, hey, sure, tough love might work, but you also have to extend some positivity there. And I think that's where Michael was kind of lacking, you know, just in terms of how I would respond to some of that stuff. But mm-hmm. you know, with your experience in sports, let's start with the type of leadership that you know, inspired you. Like, how for you personally, how does the concept of leadership work?
I like somebody who's tough but fair. My dad was a drill sergeant, and I've always responded to kind of hard ass people that challenge mm-hmm. me. I could be somebody who, if I'm not challenged, I can kind of drift away.
Speak louder, Pete.
exactly. Yeah, I like to be challenged. I very much relate to people like Jordan and Kobe's, like, oh, you like, so for example, like, I remember when I started LFR, there's a message board poster that I won't be more specific than that. It's just like talking shit, right? Like, mm-hmm. and I was like, all right, you'll see. Like, I was just doing this kind of for fun, but I'm about to fuck this up. Like, I'm about to do some shit with this just so that I can DM you in like a year and rub your face.
So you got my messages.
I did. Thank you for the motivation, Anthony. I like to be challenged. I like people who are consistent in their approach, right? That are very but demanding, right? Like, that basically a coach's job or a leader's job is to get the best out of the people around them. Mm-hmm. And how to do that is not the same for everybody by any means. And so I actually, like, the way that Jordan is, I would have loved that. I would have mm-hmm. been like, he told the story in the last episode about how he was talking some shit to Steve Kerr and being physical with him, and Kerr like shoved him back mm-hmm. and then Jordan punched him in the eye. Right. Mm-hmm. And, I've always been one of, if not the like shortest dude in the class. Right. And, mm-hmm. and I love sports on top of that. Right. So there was always that, like, look, like, you're not going to disrespect me, and I'm going to prove myself, and I'm going
to, you know. You didn't go to Huntington Beach High School, did you?
I'm just saying, when you told that story, I was like, yeah,
you're
I get
a team,
it. I get
you were
it.
A team sucker punch.
I was rooting for the other guy, yeah. Exactly. No, man, but being a short dude who loves sports, there's very much that, like, I've got to prove myself. You know, the first time you play, you're going to be one of the last picks. And, mm-hmm. you know, whenever you're around a new group, and I always vowed, like, you're only going to pick me last once. Mm-hmm. And after I play, whatever sport it is, like I'm gonna come after you as best as I can. And I know I'm not gonna be able to do that with my physicality, but my whole attraction to the minutia of the sport, the little ins and outs of it, the little advantages. Shit, man, that's the only way I could get a shot off is if I knew right. how to, you know, use my body, or if I knew this cut or this footwork or something like that to be able to get myself open. That actually served me very well as a coach, right? Being able, mm-hmm. having all of these guys who were a lot more athletic than me, and I'm the old guy. They're like, yeah, hey, he ain't shit. And then I get myself open, mm-hmm. and then I say, now imagine what you could do if you use right. the same tools, right? If I can get open against you, mm-hmm. imagine if you use that, right? So anyway, I'm off on a tangent here, but
yeah.
I've always liked that style of leadership, like the Jordan hard ass thing. And I would stand up to somebody like that, right? Like, I don't care who you are, you're not gonna disrespect me, and that's right. how that respect is earned. But I also know that that's certainly not for everybody.
I think there's a place for it, right? Like, there are sometimes, who tweeted it? Was it Domin? I think Domin tweeted that, you know, there are some people on Twitter who could have used some of Michael Jordan's leadership, right?
Nice. I didn't see that, but I love that.
And you know, I frankly agree, right? There are some people who could maybe learn a couple lessons from real life. My thing is, you also have to, like, one thing that, and I said this in yesterday's show, you know, I relayed Le Batard's message in yesterday's show, and I'll say it again, not too much positivity from Michael in this, you know, now 8-part, there's been 8 hours of content here. And I think you can count the number of compliments he's offered up on one hand. And if you take out the compliments that he didn't have for, like, his mom or his dad, you can maybe count them on, like, 2 fingers, you know?
Sure. And they're almost always reserved for people who, like, have his back. Like,
yeah.
Jordan likes you if you properly kiss the ring and bend the knee, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why he and Barkley get along, right?
Well, like, Ahmad Rashad has, like, he's, like, the example here.
Right, right.
But, you know, my thing has always been, and this is how I coached, was I'm going to be hard on you, especially point guards, because I was a point guard, right? I would not have wanted to play point guard for me. I'm going to be hard on you, but if you succeed, or if you follow kind of my coaching, you know, when you work hard, I will be just as positive as I can be negative on you, right? If I'm going to be really hard on you, I'm also going to be really jubilant. It should the moment call for it, right? I'm going to be out there for you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the big thing, and this is where I think Michael can truly be called a leader, is the way he led by example, right? I could see Michael trying to win every single drill he's ever played in. I could, like, to the point where it drives some of his teammates insane, but at the end of the day, he's going to try to lead by example. Not everybody's perfect in that regard. You know, Kobe missed a rotation, especially later in his career, right? And yelled at a teammate for his not rotating over in that rotation. But, you know, for the most part, what I need in a leader is, yes, the tough love is fine, but also have some positivity there. Because positive reinforcement is shown to work on people. But then also it's just as important that if you're going to be really hard on everybody around you, you got to be hard on yourself too, you know? Sure. You know, that's where it was kind of frustrating sometimes to watch LeBron last year. I thought last year he was a pretty poor leader, you know, in that he, you know, he expected a lot out of the players around him, but didn't necessarily hold himself particularly accountable very often. Mm-hmm. And you know, I would be curious if how he feels about his job as a leader last year. I'd be curious, you know, I would have loved to hear Michael continue to, like, you know how sometimes, did you ever watch The Office? Mm-hmm. You know that one scene where, like, Pam runs off camera. She's, like, really emotional. And the person who was holding, like, the sound boom, like, went over and consoled her, right? Mm-hmm. I would have loved, in that moment where Michael walks off camera, he yanks out his earpiece, probably takes off his microphone or whatever. I want to hear what he says in that moment. I want to know what's going through his mind in that moment, because I think that's where he was about to be super honest about how he feels about himself as a leader. That would have been probably the most interesting moment of this entire documentary. I'm bummed we didn't get it. Maybe there'll be some longer cuts or something like that, but I'm bummed we didn't get it because he was about to say something really real, but stopped himself short. And I wish we would have got that.
I've always gotten the impression that he didn't care. Like, he didn't care what you thought of him as a leader. That's part of being a leader is like, I don't care if everybody else disagrees with me. This is how I am. This is what I believe. These are the principles that I stand for. And he was the only reason he was a leader of that team is because he was so much better than everybody else. Right. Like, yeah. he was so much, and he was the best player in the NBA. And so that comes with a certain, like, you get to be the, you know, it's the whole, yeah, you get to be whatever you want and lead whatever when you play like that. I don't know. It's interesting that you saw that, because you're usually very perceptive about these things. Maybe my mind's too clouded by the notion that he just didn't care. But that's honestly just been where I've stood with him, and the impression that I've gotten is that, like, I don't care. Like, look at the scoreboard. Look at all these rings that I got. Well, I don't.
That might have been the moment of honesty, right?
Sure.
Like, he might be frustrated with the fact that he doesn't give a fuck. And, like, why do you guys?
But, like, why are you asking me these questions?
I have all these rings. Look at this house. This glass of tequila is worth more than your car payment.
Like, right.
I could see, like, maybe that's the moment of honesty, but I do really feel like we were on the verge of legitimate honesty in that moment, whatever direction it might be. If it's regret, right? If it's like, hey, maybe if I, you know, maybe if I wasn't so hard on Scotty, or maybe if I, you know, showed a little bit more humanity towards Kraus, maybe we stick together beyond that, right? Because like at this point, you know, the story's written. We know how that turns out, right? And you know, if he feels like he could have done more winning, he lost two prime years of his career. Like, he was the baddest MF-er in the world in those 2 years that he left to go play baseball. Is he as sick of the sport if he allows himself to garner more joy from it over the course of his career? Like, those are things that, and maybe, like I said, maybe the moment of honesty is no, that isn't it. The frustration here is that people care about Steve Kerr's feelings, right? Maybe that's the spot that he's in there. But I would have just loved to know, as he walks off, does a director say, like, hey man, like, this is like a huge moment. This could be like a breakthrough. If I was like a psychiatrist on hand there, I'd be like, Michael, we're about to actually get somewhere. Where are you going? You know, I'm kind of bummed that we didn't get that. The question that we kind of started this segment off though was, do you think this is for us to judge? Do you think, with our lack of experience in the NBA, do you think the NBA is so unique that we can't be able to judge leadership? We can analyze what we consider good leadership or the kind of leadership that we relate to most, but is this something that we can call somebody a good leader and somebody else a bad one?
On a very limited basis, yes, but for the most part, no. I think that being involved in organized sports, especially even on the high school level, you get some degree of, like, you're together all the time, because that's what's different about whenever people try to draw analogies between
their job and jobs the NBA.
And the NBA, part of where it falls apart is, like, these guys travel together, they room together on the road, they spend so much of their lives together in ways that are not they're not applicable to a regular job. And in a regular job, there's not like a direct win and loss. There's not such an immediate, you know, result. opponents are a little more, it's all a little vaguer, right? In mm-hmm. terms of how you win versus how you lose. So I think to some extent we can do it, but I don't think that, like, I think it's up to the people that were in that room, right? And in a documentary, and I'm using quote fingers.
Yeah.
I say that because it's not that, like, the guys who had something nice to say about, basically what Jordan wanted to get across was like, yeah, but he's worth it. But
yeah,
it was worth it. Like, that's what, like, yeah, he was an asshole, but you know, any other way. Well, probably not all 12 guys on that team felt that way. They're just not going to make it to the final version of the show. So it's not for me to say or for you to say. It's for more so for them.
Yeah. I think I mostly agree. The big difference to me here is the zero sum nature of professional sports, right? Like I used the analogy when you and I were discussing this before the show, where Apple and Microsoft can exist at the same time, right? In similar industries, and at the end of the day, you know, you can have two just tectonic entities out there that can still be successful even while the other one is successful. That's not the case in professional sports. You know, Karl Malone had an incredible career, huge tool bag. I'm not really a big fan of him at all, but I do kind of feel for the fact that his greatness was literally withheld from him by Michael Jordan. You know, we would look at Karl Malone hugely differently if he wins even one of those championships, right? If he's the guy who beats Michael in a championship series once, we look at Karl Malone very differently. Same goes for Charles Barkley. Same goes for Clyde Drexler. You know, for some reason, we don't really look at it like that with Isaiah and the Bad Boy Pistons, right? Because they did beat Michael. And same goes for the Celtics. But those teams that lost to Michael in the championship, you know, we can't quite say that, like, you and I literally host different podcasts, you know, like we root for each other's podcast at mm-hmm. the end of the day. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's even with us, you and I are both hugely competitive, as evidenced by our games of ping pong against each other. Right.
Yes.
Like, the zero sum nature of sports makes it so that you can't ever really quite purely analogize any job really to sure. professional sports. And in that respect, I just don't think this is the kind of thing that we can ever, that anybody who hasn't played in the NBA can truly analogize to any of their experiences, right? It is that mm-hmm. unique. It is such a Not it's not just unique in the competitive nature, but also in some of the inherent cultural ways that league just exists, right? The hyper, the hyper machismo, the call you on your bullshit, like that stuff. Now, I don't want to go too far down that path because we start to superhumanize or underhumanize the people who participate in the league, but you know, to a certain extent, the way that they interact with each other is not like, it's not the way that you and I interact on here. Like, if we disagree mm-hmm. on like the direction of the show, or if Harrison and I disagreed on the direction of a column that I would write back when I was at Silver Screen and Roll, it's not like we could haul off and punch each other. Like, it's sure, and that would just be like accepted as a Tuesday. That is kind of the mm-hmm. world that they exist in. And in that regard, I don't think that is something for us to be able to truly judge. We can analyze it. We can give our own thoughts on what we consider good leadership and how we think we would respond to certain types of leadership. But in terms of what works for professional athletes, I think this is the one spot where we kind of have to just butt out.
Yeah, no, it does. It's ultimately not our place.
There's no like stats. Like, we can say, sure. we can say like, hey, Vogel's decision to keep going with Rondo is not working because here's plus minus, or this personnel move that Rob Pelinka went with is not going to work because here's this guy's stats at the role that this guy's or that the Lakers are hoping to fill. Like, we can contextualize those things because there's a foundation of information that we can actually utilize there. But we don't. There's no such thing. There's just success or the lack thereof. And if we just use success or the lack thereof to decide what works or what doesn't, that's a hugely flawed process. I don't think there's any way to really handle that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just, we just don't have access to that, to those dynamics.
Yeah. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We have a really fun episode. Harrison and I are going to draft Harry Potter and Star Wars teams to go up against each other in tomorrow's show. So look forward to that one. Right up your alley, right? and then Pete and I will be back, hopefully, to have a little bit more to talk about in relation to the NBA's plans moving forward, hopefully. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Check out BuiltBar.com. Use a promo code LOCKEDON to get saved $10. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.